The National Broadcasting Company presents the fourth in a series of eight radio dramas by George H. Faulkner, entitled American Portraits. Tonight's star, from Broadway and motion pictures, Kent Smith. This is a portrait of General Thomas Jonathan Jackson, commander of the Second Corps in the Army of Northern Virginia, Confederate States of America. And men will tell their children, when all other memories fade, how they fought with Stonewall Jackson in the old Stonewall Brigade. I look upon war, said old Jack, as the sum of all evils. Yet at the call of duty, he waged war with a genius unparalleled in the history of arms. We must think of the living, he wrote, and those who are to come after us, and see that by God's blessing we transmit to them the freedom we have ourselves inherited. Time as we begin, quite a good many years ago, when the century was young. Place, the shaded banks of a quiet stream somewhere in Virginia, anywhere in Virginia. A man and a boy have been fishing. They're resting now under the shade of the trees. The man, we can see, is quite elderly, but of distinguished appearance, despite a battered old gray hat full of feathered fishhooks. He might be a judge or perhaps a clergyman. The boy is young, about 12, very eager.
But, Granddad, do you mean to say old Stonewall was a better soldier than... Teddy Roosevelt, even?
Why, boy, there's just no comparison. Teddy's still an amateur. Old Jack was the greatest professional soldier that ever lived. You still planning to go to VMI, son?
Oh, you bet I am.
Well, when you get there, you'll study Jackson's campaigns, just as they do up at West Point.
How he fooled the Yankees over in Shenandoah Valley.
That was his masterpiece, the Great Valley Campaign. That and his flanking march at Chancellorsville. Over in the valley, boy, Jackson whipped four federal armies, fought five battles in 30 days, won them all, marched 400 miles between fights, and he left those Yankee generals so mixed up, they didn't know their headquarters from their hindquarters.
I guess he must have moved mighty fast.
Like lightning, son. Foot cavalry, they called us, because we covered so much ground.
Well, if he marched around so much like that... why'd they call him Stonewall?
Now, son, I've told you that story 20 times if I've told it once.
I never get tired of it.
Sure.
Honest, I don't.
Well, then, as you very well know, it happened at the first Battle of Bull Run. Our brigade, the 1st Virginia, was formed along the crest of Henry Hill near Manassas. General Jackson was sitting on his horse, Little Sorrel, close by, talking with his aide, Lieutenant H.H. Lee.
Bad, General. Very bad. See yonder? Lee's brigade is broken. They're running back from the swamp. The Mississippi troops are running, sir.
Yes, I can see that, Lieutenant. But we'll stand fast here.
Look, sir, that horseman. It's General B himself.
Yes. Perhaps he needs advice.
General Jackson, we're beaten back, sir. We're defeated. Crushed.
Very well, General. May I suggest that you rally your men behind our line?
But how do you expect to stop them?
We'll give them the bayonet. Lieutenant Lee.
Yes, sir?
Tell the colonels of this brigade that the enemy is almost upon us. When their heads are seen above the hill, let the whole line rise. Move forward with a shout and trust to the bayonet. I'm tired of this long-range work.
With that boy, General B took heart, turned his horse about, and rode down into the midst of his broken troops. His horse was killed beneath him, but he leaped to his feet, shouting,
"Men! Men, look! On the crest of the hill, there's Jackson's brigade standing behind you like a stone wall! There stands Jackson! Rally with the Virginians! Rally!"
A moment later, General B fell to the ground, mortally wounded. But he had given an immortal name to a great leader of men. The next night, in bivouac on the victorious field of First Manassas, General Stonewall Jackson wrote to his wife.
"My dear Marianna, yesterday we fought a great battle and gained a great victory, for which all the glory is due to God alone. Whilst great credit is due to other parts of our gallant army, God made my brigade more instrumental than any other in repulsing the main attack. This is for your information only. Say nothing about it. Let others speak praise, not myself."
You see, son, old Jack was a strongly religious man. And I want you to keep that in mind.
Oh, I shall, sir.
He lived by the New Testament, and he fought by the old, so we used to say.
What did old Jack look like, Granddad?
He didn't look like much, lad. Sort of a brown all-over man, you might say. Scotch-Irish, like your mother's folk.
I bet you men were real scared of General Jackson, I'll bet.
No. No, we loved him, boy. And that's God's honest truth. Oh, he was stern, and he was secretive. He could be cold and harsh as a winter gale, and the next minute as gentle as a woman in love. We officers on his staff soon learned to expect him to act, well, contrary-wise. For instance, he always liked to march at what he called early dawn. I remember one spring morning in 1863, with the first touch of day hardly visible.
"Captain Douglas? Where is Captain Douglas? Dabney, Dr. McGuire, Lieutenant Smith." "Jim. You, Jim."
"Yes, sir. You call me General?"
"Certainly I called you. Perhaps you could tell me what the gentlemen of my staff are doing."
"Well, I reckon they're still sleeping, sir, excepting Captain Douglas. He over with General A.P. Hill's folks, like you told him. Here he comes now."
"Good morning, Captain Douglas."
"Good morning, sir."
"You have a report from General Hill? He's ready to march."
"His staff is at breakfast, sir. But the general, well, sir, he's not awake as yet."
"Not awake? He was ordered to move his division out at 4, leading our column. You have a watch, Captain Douglas?"
"Of course, sir."
"What time is it?"
3 minutes past 4 o'clock, sir."
"Here. You will kindly examine my own watch. What time does it indicate?"
"The same, sir."
"Plus 10 seconds. Captain Douglas, you will return to the headquarters of General A.P. Hill's division. Awaken him, if necessary. Ask on my authority to see his watch. If it agrees with my own and yours, you will instruct General Hill to turn over his command to Brigadier General Branch. At once."
"Yes, sir. Very well, sir."
"Morning, Douglas."
"Morning, Major."
"Ah, Major Dabney, at last. Where's Dr. McGuire?"
"Oh, he'll be here any minute, sir." "My. A hot breakfast. Jim, you're a wonder."
"Major Dabney."
"Yes, sir?"
"You slept well, I trust."
"Excellently well, General. I'm feeling quite refreshed."
"Then you will require no breakfast. Neither shall I. Nor will the other officers of my staff. We are 5 minutes late right now. Jim?"
But, General, sir, she already nice and hot."
"Sweep that stuff off the stove, Jim. Dump it. On the ground with it, Jim."
Yes, sir. My, oh, my.
"Come along, Major. We have much to do. Orderly! Orderly! Where are the horses? You!
Good morning, Jim. Breakfast ready?
No breakfast, Dr. McGuire. My, oh, my.
No breakfast?
Not nary a bit, nohow. General's orders, sir.
Oh, up on his ear again, eh? Must say you're cheerful about it, boy.
Well, I had my breakfast, sir. Doctor.
What is it, Jim?
Action ahead, Doctor. Real action. Show is shooting.
If you know that, you know more than I do. How do you know, Jim?
The general, sir. He been praying in his tent nearly all night. Just praying and praying.
And so, gentlemen, a little fasting now and then is good for active, healthy men. Am I not right, Dr. McGuire?
I'm a staff surgeon, General. I know little about diet.
Hungry, McGuire?
I could eat General Hooker, Yankee boots and all.
We'll see what we can do for you at the next halt.
General Jackson, if you please.
Yes, Captain Douglas?
General Brandt, sir, he asked me to inquire where we're going.
We are moving towards Hooker's Union Army. Our route is known to General Lee and to myself and to no one else save God. Gentlemen, if this old coat of mine knew the roads we were taking, I would burn it with fire.
Captain! Oh, please, sir, please!
I see we must halt, gentlemen.
Halt! Ma'am, you will kindly get out of the road. This is General Jackson.
Oh, General Jackson, please, sir.
There now, Douglas. Don't bully the woman. You gentlemen ride on. I'll see what she wants. Dr. McGuire, please stay with me. Now, ma'am, what can I do for you?
My Johnny. Will he pass this way? I must see my Johnny.
Your son, ma'am?
Yes, sir.
And he's in the Army?
Oh, yes, for 2 years now.
What regiment?
The 5th Virginia, sir.
Part of my old brigade, McGuire. General Colston's now. Ma'am, unless I'm much mistaken, Colston's infantry will begin to patch this fork in 5 minutes. The 5th Virginia should reach here in less than 10 minutes. You'll see your Johnny then, I trust.
Oh, thank you, sir. How can I thank you? It's been more than a year.
There, ma'am. Give your thanks to God. Dr. McGuire, stay here with her, if you please. See that she finds her boy. Your home is nearby, ma'am?
Yes, just beyond the fork.
Give the lad leave to stay with his mother until morning, Doctor. And you may report for breakfast up ahead in 15 minutes.
Well, boy, he was like that. Hard as granite 1 minute, the next, soft as that fine morning in May so long ago when we rode toward death. Reticent he was, and aloof, but courteous always. Modest, shy, but totally fearless. Sure of himself always in the field, and sure of his God in a humble way. That night we camped before Chancellorsville. Some 60,000 of us under Lee and Jackson against 125,000 Union troops under Hooker and Sedgwick.
Captain Douglas.
Yes, sir?
You will ride with a message to General Lee. Tell him that upon further reconnaissance, I withdraw my opinion of this morning. The general's right. We must concentrate upon Hooker rather than upon Sedgwick's corps. Tell him that Federal crossings have been observed at Ely's Ford and Germanna on the river. Await his reply.
Yes, sir. General Jackson, sir.
Yes, Douglas?
It's grown colder, sir. Shouldn't you wear your cape? Shall I get it for you from the baggage?
Oh, the general done give that old cape away, Captain. He throw it over Lieutenant Smith under yon tree to...
Jim! Young Smith gave me that cloak. I've given it back. That's all. Get along to Lee, Captain. You have a hard ride ahead.
Yes, sir. Good night, sir.
Jim... Where's my Bible?
Right here, General. I had it all ready.
You may open to the book of Joshua, chapter 10, verse 8.
Mm-hmm.
Read what has been written, Jim.
So Joshua ascended from Gilgal, he and all the people of war with him, and all the mighty men of valor. And the Lord said unto Joshua, Fear them not, for I have delivered them unto thine hand. There shall not a man of them stand before thee. Joshua therefore came unto them suddenly, and the Lord discomfited them before Israel, and slew them with a great slaughter.
Joshua therefore came unto them suddenly. Let it be so once more, O Lord. Let it be so with me once more upon the morrow. As it was in the valley, O Lord God of hosts, so let it come about again, if it be thy will. If it be thy holy will.
Did General Lee always do just what General Jackson said, Granddad?
No, hardly that. But he did trust Jackson's judgment more than that of his other generals. Later, on the night before the Battle of Chancellorsville, General Lee and General Jackson held a council of war.
We are agreed, then, to attack Hooker. The question is, where?
General Lee, sir.
General Stuart. What says the cavalry?
I just had a report from Fitzhugh Lee, scouting, sir, on our left flank. He tells me that Hooker's right is in the air, almost completely unprotected. His breastworks face south, sir, and south only.
Jeb, are there roads by which we could send out a flanking force all across the Union front and unobserved? I doubt it. Yes, General Jackson.
There is a road, sir. I sent Hotchkiss earlier today to find out. There's a forest road, well hidden, used only to cart iron ore to Welford's furnace. I have a map, and I have Mr. Welford himself to serve as guide, if need be.
Excellent. Let's take a look at that map, General. Good. Good! Jackson, what do you propose to do?
I would go around. Here, sir.
Yes?
Now, here's the westward limit of Hooker's fortification.
I see.
The hidden road comes out here, beyond his line. I could turn him, sir. I could swallow him up.
If you were not observed, General.
I shall come unto him suddenly.
Yes, you usually do. With what force do you propose to make this movement?
With my entire corps, General.
If they catch you extended along that road before you can wheel into front, they'll crush both of us, Jackson. Completely, finally.
It's that or retreat again, sir.
Very well, then. So be it.
Boy, do you see the terrible beauty of it? The audacity, the controlled daring, the quick brain behind the strong will, the joyous heart.
Oh, gee willikers, sure. It's like I read in a book. He was risking all.
He was proposing to order nearly 30,000 men, 15 brigades, to move out of a battlefront already formed and fortified into a long, thin column. Then to march them 10 miles to the west along a narrow wilderness road under the eyes of an alert enemy not 3 miles away. And he succeeded, boy. He succeeded! On the next afternoon, he was deployed right spang across the Federal flank, every man in position. Over the way, the Union troops were at ease, their arms stacked, preparing an evening meal. Watching them from a hill with his division commanders, Jackson took out his watch.
Gentlemen, it's 5:15 o'clock. 2 hours of daylight left at the most. I believe we can go forward. Please signal Major Blackford to sound the charge.
I bet they ran. I bet they ran like all get out. Those Yankees.
They were brave men, son. But he had come unto them suddenly. They ran. They had to run. They were overwhelmed, rolled up, surprised, discomfited before Israel. But their numbers were very great, and they were brave, and they rallied. Then darkness fell in the forest, and then, boy...
Yes, Granddad, I know. I know what happened. Old Stonewall was shot down.
By his own men. By his own men! A North Carolina company firing in the dark. He was hit in the left arm badly, in the right hand. A tree branch struck his head. He fell fainting from Little Saul's back. Three men, officers of his staff, sheltered him against a stream of fire with their own bodies. I was one of them, boy. I, James Parr Smith, I was one of those three men.
You mustn't remember so hard, Granddad Smith.
I know, son. I'm an old fool. It was so long ago. Well, somehow we got him to a dressing station. McGuire did his best. He amputated the general's arm. Jackson rallied. We thought he would live. Oh, how we prayed he might live. While Hooker retreated, beaten, all the South prayed for Thomas Jonathan Jackson. They took him back to the Chandler farm at Guinness Station. And then, 7 days after the battle...
How is he, Doctor? May I see him again now?
I'm sorry, Mrs. Jackson. Everything we could do has been done. The pneumonia... Well, it's worse, very much worse.
Doctor, he's going to die?
Yes, Mrs. Jackson, very soon. You may go into him once more.
Anna.
Oh, my dear. My dear. They say you're dying.
No, no. You frightened my child. Death is not so near. Not so near. Where's Dr. McGuire?
I'm here, General.
Is it true what Anna tells me?
Yes, General. It is true.
Very good. Very good. It's all right. God's will. God's holy will.
Tom. Oh, Tom, what can I do for you?
Would you... Could you read for me the Psalms?
Is there a Bible, Doctor?
Here, by his pillow.
Here. Order Hill to prepare for action. Catch the infantry to the front. Major Hawks! Major Hawks! Get food to the men!
Oh, Dr. McGuire, what shall I do?
Dear lady, try to read the book. Try, for his sake. Please try.
I can't see. I can't see.
The 23rd Psalm, ma'am. You know it. Be a soldier now, too. The Lord is my shepherd.
The Lord is my shepherd. I shall not want. He maketh me to lie down in green pastures. He leadeth me beside the still waters. He restoreth my soul. He leadeth me in the paths of righteousness for his name's sake. Yea, though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death. Of the shadow of death. Surely goodness and mercy. Goodness and mercy will be with me. Will be with
quiet. Listen. Listen, Matt.
Let us cross over the river and rest under the shade of the trees.
Sorry he died. Truly I am.
If he had lived, the story would have been different. Gettysburg would have been different. The end would have been different.
You think it would have been better, sir?
I'm not sure, Sam. I don't really know. But I know this. I threw myself between Jackson and death in that wilderness grove as the gun spat flame in the night. But still, he died. It was I, Lieutenant Jim Smith, staff of the Second Corps. It was I over whom he threw that great cape as I lay sleeping in the cold on the night before Chancellorsville. But he died. And the South. The South died too. We lost, boy. We lost. We lost.
But, Granddad, it was so very long ago.
Yes, so very long ago. We must let him rest with all the past in the cemetery at Lexington. As it was said of another hero, there, through the coming ages, when his sword is rust, and his deeds in classic pages, mindful of her trust, shall Virginia, bending lowly, still a ceaseless vigil holy, keep above his dust.
You've been listening to There Stands Jackson, with Kent Smith as General Jackson. The narrator, Lieutenant James Power Smith, was played by Ed Begley, and his grandson by Ivan Curry. Other members of the cast were Bill Adams, Martin Blaine, Arthur Carney, Ronald Long, Leora Thatcher, Cynthia Stone, and Maurice Ellis, who is currently appearing in 17, the smash hit at Broadhurst Theater in New York. The orchestra is conducted by Milton Katims with a special score composed by Alan Shulman. This is Ben Grauer inviting you to listen to American Portraits next week, when we will present Frederick Warlock in The Stepping Stones, a dramatic character study of Elder William Brewster, leader of the first Pilgrim settlers. American Portraits is produced and directed by D. Engelbach and written by George H. Faulkner. Tonight's script was presented through the courtesy of the editors of Cavalcade of America, which is heard regularly on Tuesday nights and which will resume its fall broadcasting season on September 4th. There Stands Jackson came to you from our studios in New York City. Now hear Brian Donlevy and his dangerous assignment on NBC.